Well, they were downcast as they stood there, as the stranger joined them on the road to Emmaus. The bottom had absolutely dropped out of their world. They had hoped, they said to him, that Jesus was the one who was going to redeem Israel. But of course he'd been crucified. Note though what they then say. This is what they say. Some of the women went to the tomb, didn't find his body, came back and told them about angels. Now, perhaps the initial reaction, I must be careful what I say, but in those days, you know, women were thought to be unreliable witnesses. But then they say others of the group, presumably some of the men, went and saw the tomb empty, but didn't see Jesus and came back and said so. Now, am I missing something here? Why, oh why, didn't Cleopas and his companion, probably his wife, go and see for themselves? Now, I know it was sort of totally confusing and everything else. Surely you and I would have. Think about it. Some women go and say, the tomb's empty. And we've seen some angels. And then some men go and say, yeah, the tomb's empty. Now, wouldn't you actually want to go yourself rather than just set off for a 7 mile Sunday afternoon walk? I can't really, honestly, can't quite work out why they didn't. After all, Jesus' body was missing and they hadn't got it. So where was it? No. I mean, though the story, of course, that the authorities put out was that the disciples had got it, that they'd stolen it. I mean, the authorities had to put that story out, really, didn't they? Because they hadn't got it either. If they had, they'd have produced it pretty quickly to scotch the rumours of resurrection as they developed. They'd have said, here's his body. So they had to say that the disciples had stolen it. But actually, that's pretty ludicrous. Could the disciples have launched a daring night attack, demoralised as they were, against a tomb guarded by Roman soldiers? And would they, even if they had managed that, and that would have been quite something to pull off, would they then suffer and die for proclaiming that Jesus was risen, even though they'd have known 100% it was an absolute lie? How ludicrous to steal the body, hide it, and then say he's alive and get put to death because of it. Would you do that? I don't think anybody in their right mind would do that. You don't die, surely, for what you know to be a lie. You may for a mistaken belief. I mean, suicide bombers, we would say, are mistaken, but they are convinced that their cause is right. And there's a big difference there. So where was the body? The authorities hadn't got it. The disciples hadn't got it. I mean, had he revived, come to, in the cold of the tomb? I mean, we do read from time to time in the press of people sort of on the slab in a morgue coming to. But I mean, it seems to me that the Romans were pretty good at crucifixion. I mean, they had lots of practice at it. They were professional and ruthless. So I think we can be pretty sure that when he was put in the tomb, Jesus was actually completely dead. But now, clearly the tomb was empty. And yet that's only half the story. It seems, look, I know we've got hindsight, and that's a wonderful thing, but the only logical explanation, it seems to me, is what the Gospels actually say, that Jesus really had risen from the dead. Now, it wasn't with a shock and awe thing. It wasn't what Charlie and I would have done, which would have been on a fairly big scale. I mean, he interestingly doesn't appear to Pilate. He doesn't appear to Caiaphas and the council. He doesn't appear to the crowds who had shouted crucify. I mean, we might have gone for that, really. Although, of course, In the wilderness, at the start of his ministry, Jesus rejected the spectacular, didn't he? You know, throw yourself down from the pinnacle of the temple and he'll give his angels charge to hold you in their hands. I mean, he didn't go for that, and he doesn't now. But he was alive, he was recognisable, but different. He wasn't, it seems to me, a revised corpse. There wasn't a sort of conjuring trick with bones, sort of reassembling them exactly as before. A former Bishop of Durham, David Jenkins, got into terrible trouble in the press, didn't he, for saying that. The headlines were, Bishop does not believe in the resurrection. Well, that wasn't remotely what he'd said. But then the press usually aren't too worried about the niceties of what people actually say and mean, are they? But he was there. He was with his friends who didn't expect him. As Charlie said last week, he was there when the doors were locked. And they certainly weren't expecting him then. Twice in a week with doors locked. And Cleopas and his wife didn't recognise him for, what, an hour or more? As he was walking along with them. Now, I sometimes get told off for walking past people in the street when my mind is clearly elsewhere and you don't see them, and sometimes you don't recognise people when they're out of context. But if you're in their company and chatting to them and with them for about an hour, you would expect to have a fighting chance of, you know, me recognising Linda or John or, you know, whoever. Having some faint idea that I've seen them somewhere before, you know. So it was very strange. But they suddenly recognised Jesus as he broke bread, and then he disappeared. So it is different. It is a different body. Coming through locked doors. I mean, it's an interesting point. I was talking to my brother yesterday as we were going to football and saying, you know, he appears to Thomas and says to Thomas, reach and put your hand in my side and touch. Were his appearances tailored for the people he was meeting? Or was he, every time he appeared after the resurrection, you know, had he got the nail prints and the hole in his side or whatever? I leave that with you. It doesn't really matter. It clearly, they recognised him for who he was. The penny dropped. It was really him. And over a period of time, all the disciples are filled with peace and joy as they meet the risen Lord. I mean, the tomb didn't really matter anymore once he was risen. Whether you know, it didn't need to become a shrine for them. When some of them went to the tomb, they were asked by the angel, why are you looking for the living among the dead? You know, it was the wrong place now to be looking, because everything was now changed for his friends. Because he met them literally where they were. It was as if everything Jesus had said in his ministry was sort of now confirmed. God's kingdom had broken into the world, into their everyday experience. In my commentary, I quote a source that says, what God had always planned came to birth in Bethlehem, to fulfillment on Calvary, to victory at the resurrection, to exaltation at ascension, and is even now coming to consummation. You need to sort of think about that. But clearly, then and there, everything changed for the disciples. Changed even for Peter, who had denied him. And do you remember the scene in the courtyard when Peter has been cornered and people have said, you were one of them, and he says no, and they get the clincher, you are, because you can tell from the way you speak, you can tell I come from the Midlands, you know, you could tell that Peter came from Galilee, and he denies his Lord, and he uses in one of the versions some fairly choice language. And at that very moment, Luke tells us that Jesus looked straight at Peter. I don't know what Peter thought at that moment. You wonder what the look was. I fancy the look was primarily one of compassion and love that Jesus always showed to people who got it wrong. And it was that love and compassion that the risen Lord showed to his friends. There were no recriminations. He didn't start off by saying to them, you lot made a total pig's ear of that, didn't you? You let me down big time. You abandoned me. You denied me. You ran away. So we've got some bridge building to do. We've got some work to do to restore our relationship. He doesn't say that at all, does he? He comes and says, peace be with you. No questions asked. Peace be with you. God's love isn't into recriminations, is it? It's to be welcomed and embraced. And some of our hymns take that up. We sing in a hymn, Jesus restores what sin would destroy. And about his kingdom being mercy and grace, where lepers are cleansed, sinners find place, outcasts are welcomed, and hope is awakened in place of despair. Isn't that good news for our world today? And it's all begun in Jesus and made whole in heaven, one of the hymns says. And there's another hymn that sums everything up by saying, God is love. So love forever, or the universe must reign. In that Easter resurrection love that the disciples experienced and that changed them can be in the here and now for us. What is really important, beyond what you and I might think about the empty tomb or about all this as historical fact, is that the risen Lord meets and greets us on our journey of life, where we are, in our situations. He can be in our everyday experience. He really can. Again, offering to change everything. To meet our deepest needs and hang-ups, whatever they might be, and most of us have got some, or our worries, or our concerns. He offers us his love day by day as we worship him here, and as we go into the world, as we shall say at the end of the service, to walk in God's light, to rejoice in God's love, and to reflect his glory. That's his offer and his promise. And as Charlie reminded us last week, Jesus' resurrection deals with fear. All the deep and vague ones too. And that's tremendous news. And it deals with grief as well. Everything that is negative in our lives and in our world, his resurrection love deals with. And we're going to sing about that now in our next hymn.